afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today we have a stacked bumper edition of people on the podcast today. We have, I don't know if anyone watching the show has ever watched Indian news stations like New Delhi TV, but they have these sort of discussion panels on the news network where there's like 12 people to discuss one topic and each person only gets about 5 seconds to speak. So hopefully we won't quite be in that situation, but there are four of us today. I'm joined today by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. But let's be honest, 12 people on an Indian panel show is still, relative to population, not representative.
Yes, I suppose.
I mean, per population, four of us are bigger per population than 12 Indians. Just saying.
Yeah, no, exactly. We're people say that we're trying to, you know, that our polling doesn't have a large enough sample size. Well, you know, here we're increasing our sample sizes. We've also joined today by Chris Hutton.
Nick, Herman, John, yeah, all good, thanks. I thought we were going to talk about President Ramaphosa's upcoming trip to Washington, but there is bigger news for us to analyze from a South African policy perspective. So thank goodness for South African politicians.
Indeed, indeed. And I think we also talked about that earlier this week. And then joining us as well today is our boss, John Andrews. John, very good to have you on.
Thank you. I think we've got an embarrassment of riches in terms of topics, as is so often the case. And today indeed. Again, lots to talk about.
And unfortunately, today we're going to have to talk about something that was very concerning to us. And that is some comments made by Dean McPherson, who is the DA Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. He was speaking at the Big Agricultural Festival, Nampu, where he was on a panel discussion talking about the expropriation bill. Something which we have been very concerned about as a piece of legislation. And I'm just going to read some concerning quotes from him that were reported by News 24. The headline was, McPherson said that nil can be a form of compensation. We'll get into that in a second. McPherson said the word compensation had been weaponized by politicians. This despite the fact that his own party is currently challenging the expropriation bill in court. He said, the new legislation seeks to standardize the procedure in which expropriation occurs with, and that politicians who oppose this should beware what they wish for, that future governments may even draft worse expropriation laws than this. He said, quote, if the act were to be struck down in its entirety and we go back to the 1975 law, I don't know what's going to come after that. In politics, you must be careful what you wish for, because sometimes you can get it. What happens after that is open to a new parliament that has very different dynamics. Let's try to deal with the contradictions in the current law. Let's try to deal with those issues, and let's safeguard what, by and large, in my view, is an act that provides those definitions and those clarities where needed. He went on to say, quote, people confuse an unlawful act of expropriation without compensation as expropriation with nil compensation. Nil compensation is clearly defined, and they are not the same thing. Nil is a form of compensation. I'm going to try that next time I go to the shops. Now, amusingly, one of our panelists today was, in fact, in the same panel discussion. That was Herman, who has a great quote here in the same piece discussing this. The story reads, in response to a muttered comment from Pretorius, the minister told him, quote, I'm talking, to which Pretorius responded, nonsense, though. So we'll get to you in a second, Herman. The minister went on to say, I'm utterly convinced that nil is not an acceptable or applicable outcome on a farm. No court will come to that determination because it does not align with the Constitution. Let me just read some comments from the DA's, DA Federal Chairperson Helen Ziller, who is leading the court case against the expropriation bill that apparently the minister from her own party is kind of sort of okay with, said, quote, the DA has asked the court for an order that will nullify the Expropriation Act in its current form. The DA's challenge to the act is both substantive and procedural. apart from the compelling legal shortcomings, the DA strongly opposes the substance of the act, which seeks to fulfill the mandate of the ANC's elective conference in 2017, which mandated the ANC to include expropriation without compensation as an instrument of law. After the DA defeated the ANC's plan to amend Section 25 of the Constitution to enable expropriation without compensation, amending this act became a blunt instrument of the ANC's majoritarianism in the last parliament. We reject this act because we believe that no government in a democratic country should be given sweeping powers to expropriate property without compensation. We have not forgotten that the apartheid government used similar powers to forcibly remove communities from their land, often with inadequate compensation or none at all. So those are comments from Helen Ziller, which seem to be completely contradicted by what Dean McPherson said. As for his claim that the law provides clarity, I will like to read my least favorite section of the Expropriation Act, which there are many problems with the Expropriation Act, but I will read this bit. It may be just and equitable for no compensation to be paid where land is expropriated in the public interest, having regard to all relevant circumstances, including but not limited to. And then it lays out a number of reasons for why one might want to expropriate this land. But that little trick of the words there, including but not limited to, means that it's essentially an open-ended list, which means you can come up with any sort of reason to provide no compensation. Dean McPherson's comments, I think, are also in contrast to his own tweet on the matter, which he made on the 24th of January, where he said, just after the signing of the expropriation bill, he said, as Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, there will be no expropriation of private property without compensation on my watch. The guarantee of property rights under Section 25 of the Constitution is not up for debate and is non-negotiable. Interesting thing to tweet if you think that nil is a form of compensation. But anyway, Herman, you were there. Is the reporting right for a start on the minister's comments? And why is McPherson suddenly kind of doing a 180 on what he previously said on this issue?
I would say the reporting is almost right. In person, what he said was much worse. There was genuinely, I was on a panel of four panelists, myself, Minister McPherson, Willem multi-pronged surname, something, the deputy president of AgriSA, Tiu Boshoff of Agbis, and Jaco Kleinans of Solidarity. And what was clear from the outset was that we had the politician and the two representatives of big agribusiness just in lockstep. They were so comfortable with the Expropriation Act. They were so comfortable with short-selling or soft-soaping the most dangerous parts of the bill, of the act. And it really was difficult to pin McPherson down on specifics, because he would, in one breath, defend the act as necessary. Then he would rely on stuff like transmission lines need to be built and ports and stuff, without him seeming to understand that there's a difference in the law and in the Constitution between expropriation for a public purpose, where the state requires it to function, and expropriation in the public interest, where it is in pursuit of a national ambition, which could be anything, which is essentially political fuzziness. And the really worrying thing about the section you read, Nick, just now, is that we should include these terms. It may be just and equitable for no compensation to be paid where land is expropriated in the public interest. So Section 12 is of particular application to public interest expropriation, not public purpose expropriation. And the minister consistently tried to say, we need this act because otherwise transmission lines and inland ports and stuff won't be able to be developed, seemingly unaware of the fact that the real issue in the bill is not public purpose expropriation, though that is problematic. The real worry is public interest expropriation, where the nil compensation issue is directly applicable. So I was disgusted by the sort of bonhomie and the cozy bedmate situation that I experienced with the minister to my right and the two members of organized agribusiness. That was quite shocking, actually. And the fundamental concern for McPherson also is, you asked me why has he made this change. I don't know if he knows. If we've heard from some people, it might just be sort of gatgraping or brown nosing because, you know, I think Paul Mashatile was there. Or it might just be that he has genuinely drunk the ministerial Kool-Aid, that he has decided, these are my principles. If you don't like them, I have others. And for a DA minister to go that route after making such a strong case, I think, in laying the groundwork for their litigatory efforts is such a shame, because many of the IRR's arguments are included in the DA's arguments before court, and those are just undermined by what McPherson said, by his ANC-like interpretation of nil being a just and equitable amount, by his distortion of what public interest and public purpose is, and by the fact that he couldn't refute a claim that one of our farmer friends told us that a few weeks ago, McPherson had told a collection of farmers that you have those on the far left who want to expropriate everything without compensation, want the state to own everything. And then you've got those on the far right who want market-related compensation. And then you've got the DA in the middle. And I just, when I confronted him with this, the best he could say is, I shouldn't quote him out of context, I wasn't there. Now, as refutations of such horrible, horrible, I think, caricaturization of political views go, that was exceedingly weak.
So, John, it seems to me like, I mean, some of this almost seems like a direct shot at Zilla, actually, considering that she's on the panel or leading the court case that the DA is running on this piece of legislation. And now you've got senior people in the DA basically talking at complete sort of odds with each other. On one hand, saying, you know, this is a terrible piece of legislation, we need to tear it down. And on the other hand, saying, you know, be careful what we wish for. Maybe we shouldn't take this down. Actually, it might even get worse if we take it down. And actually, it's not that bad. And it's interesting to me that the divide is between one in government and one outside of government. And I am getting terrible flashbacks to when I was a DA councillor in Johannesburg, where one of the dynamics that developed was this big separation between the DA councillors who were not in the government, who were, you know, just sort of backbenchers, and the MMCs. There was like this kind of, they sort of began to have a very similar relationship where they were saying different things. The backbenchers felt like they were still in opposition, and they almost felt like they were fighting against their own government in a lot of ways. And this is exactly one of the reasons why I was very worried about the formation of the GNU to start with. I was very critical of it at the beginning, was that I was worried that the sort of desire to play internal politics with your own your own department, the desire to stay in government, all these things would create a whole bunch of incentives for politicians who were taking firm moral stances to suddenly become very wibbledy-wobbledy. I don't know, John, what's your take on this whole situation?
Yeah, I think there probably is an element of not wanting to rock the cabinet boat to this. You know, so if all your colleagues say EWC is fine, the Expropriation Act is nothing to be worried about, it is a bit, you know, unpleasant to have to go against that. The question also arises whether the issue is important enough to make a fuss about, and their views may differ. You know, and Minister McPherson may say, well, you know, this is not as much of a big deal as other people make it out to be, and these IRR people are, you know, being alarmist, they are fear-mongering, and it's completely unnecessary. And I think that is a very fundamental disagreement, because we certainly do believe that this act is a threat to South Africa's economy as a whole, to its democracy, to the prospects and opportunities that life offers to people in South Africa. And that is why we are so adamant about clarifying what the provisions of the act mean and in pointing out the risks that they pose. In terms of nil compensation being a form of compensation or an amount, and we had a discussion on our company group that we suggested that if an employee came to management saying, I haven't been paid, management would have been able to say, well, you know, you got nil payment and nil is payment, so be happy. But the employees then might also say, well, I did nil work, so I did work. It was, the amount was nil.
It brings to mind a preposterous notion. A little bit like that old Soviet Union joke, we pretend to work, they pretend to pay us.
Yes.
Once you start playing semantic games with the meaning of compensation, all of this kind of breaks down very quickly.
Yes, exactly. And my overall impression is that it's more a lack of understanding rather than the politicking. So it's, I think, a question of on the part of the minister not taking things seriously enough, not applying his mind to understanding the provisions of the Act properly as they are written in law. That is what he needs to do. That's really, really important. And one example of this is something that Hermann pointed out earlier, the difference between public purpose expropriation and public interest expropriation. That is a key distinction. It's very, very important to understand the difference between those two things. Public purpose expropriations are a common feature in law in many societies around the world, democratic societies, capitalist societies, successful societies. That's not the big problem. The big problem is the public interest part of the expropriation. A second big part of the problem is that expropriation below market value is countenanced. So it may be nil, that's worrying enough, but it can also be half of the market value of the asset, or it can be three quarters or one third. There's not really a guideline on what sort of compensation you might expect if your property gets expropriated. And another concerning aspect is that the Expropriation Act applies to all forms of property. So it's not a land expropriation act. It's an everything expropriation act. So it may be, you know, that your coin collection, your pension savings, your factory, your farm, your, I don't know, your bicycle. Like, there's not a single asset that is not covered under
your intellectual property.
Your intellectual property, exactly, yes. And so that is where we're, you know, drawing attention to and saying this is a problem. You know, it may be that the government is not going to abuse these powers and will treat them responsibly, but that's very scant comfort, we think. We also saw in some polling, I think by the Social Research Foundation, people were asked, do you think that the government can be trusted to use its expropriation without compensation powers responsibly? And I think like the people disagreeing were 65, 70% thereabouts. It's surprising that anybody would agree that it is a good idea. But yeah, most people don't agree with it. And so, yes, I think this is something that really needs to be clarified. And also, maybe just one point in closing, if I may. It's this point that we are presented as being sort of people who think there shouldn't be an Expropriation Act. That's false. We completely accept that there can be one, there should be one. We may be presented as people who think that under no circumstances may the state take an asset without paying for it. I don't think that's quite right either. So I'm thinking of a situation now where a property was used in committing a crime. And there's a law that's called, you know, asset forfeiture. If you use a vehicle in committing a crime, the state can come after you and take that vehicle because it's punishing you for doing something wrong. And that's legitimate. You know, that's a sort of normal part of government business. Another example is abandoned properties. But there you want to be really careful. You know, so let's say there's a piece of property that has been abandoned for 20 years and the government makes a sincere effort to locate the owner and say, you know, you've got to do something with this. We can't just leave it lying there. And it's unable to find anybody. What must then happen? And that would be sort of a case where you'd say, okay, there has to be some mechanism for a property that where an owner can't be traced to be managed somehow. But that has to be done according to very clear rules. You know, it cannot just be made up or left vague or anything like that. There has to be like a time limit, for example, 20 years. There has to be a specification on what sort of lengths you've got to go to try to find the owner, how you document your efforts, and then what the process is that would allow that property to be transferred into the ownership of the state. So all of this is, you know, you can think about this logically. This shouldn't be an emotive issue. This should be done logically in a way that's good for the economy, that's fair on property owners, and that's also reasonable in terms of how the state can manage private property in a country. And I think all of that is doable, but it takes clarity on the provisions of the law.
And right. Could I just quickly add something there, Nick? Go ahead. Anthea Jeffrey, our great colleague, actually wrote an alternative expropriation bill. So Minister McPherson also pretended that it was a choice between the 1975 Act, which needed replacing, and this bill or this act that needs amending. It is quite dishonest to pretend that those were the two extreme options. And he also said on the panel that through regulations, he as minister could manage this act and its worst components. And I just think that is terribly naive, because regulations are a weak form of law. They are issued by the minister on ministerial discretion, and a new minister can very easily issue new regulations. So if you're in a situation where the law is only as good or as bad as the regulations issued by the minister, then you could have just passed a one-sentence act saying, on this issue, we trust the minister. And that should have been done enough. That is essentially what McPherson is arguing for.
That is an argument that is anti-rule of law. Rule of law means that there are clear rules that are applied all the time to everyone, and things like regulations essentially...
predictable, understandable...
Exactly. They're not quite the same as discretionary powers, but they're sort of in that direction, away from hard and fast legislation that constrains the terms here. And this is an argument simply saying, as a commenter here said, you know, trust me, bro, I won't do anything bad with the Expropriation Act while I'm minister. Well, that's great, and I'm happy for you. And, that's probably, for the most part, true. But it's not really very comforting for a politician to say, no, don't worry, I have the power to kill you, but I won't, just because, you know, I'm a good guy. it's not the way our society should work. The rules of what can, there should be stability, and there should be clear rules about what can and can't happen. Chris, I was gonna ask you actually a question on that point, but instead let me move to something else, and picking up on a bit of what John said about, you know, how many people don't seem to be... you know, how many South Africans, when we ask them, are quite suspicious of government having this power. And I guess the point here is, you know, the lazy kind of political analysis on this might be, oh, well, you know, McPherson is just playing sort of populist politics. But he's not, because this is not really an issue that, you know, the majority of South Africans, particularly I think South Africans who are either voting for the DA or considering voting for the DA, are really enthusiastic about. In fact, I would say this is really counterproductive to the DA's own political goals. So just as from a sort of purely political analysis point of view, I mean, what do you think is going on here? This just seems like completely backwards.
So maybe the one lens through which to look at this, the point you're raising, talking about the next local government elections coming up end of next year, maybe early 2027 by the latest. How does a party like the DA, if it follows this kind of interpretation, one of its ministers, I'm not saying the whole party, how does it then differentiate itself from a party like the ANC in that local government election campaign? What does it do with the goodwill it has built up as being part of the GNU, and taking into consideration all the difficult internal political battles, having to expend some of your political capital on some pieces of legislation and policy? Do you recoup that capital that you might have lost by comments like this? How do you do so? You've got limited opportunities on the campaign trail to do that kind of thing. With South African politics now, just it's entrenched now that it's going to be more fractured and more fiercely contested, with many parties fishing in the DA's pond. Where are the opportunities going to be, just from an optics point of view, from a comms point of view, from a values point of view, both to people who have voted for you up until now and those who might be sitting on the fence? To go back to your point on the polling and the results we've seen over years now, many years, I mean, and not just the polling, but South Africa's history, is it little surprise that South Africans across generations are rightly skeptical of the government having these sorts of powers, any government? Then going to the polling and the preferences and the values, you've got this opportunity as being part of the GNU. You've got a court case that your party has launched. Bolster your arguments for your values and your solutions to the problems that South Africans face, to dealing with bread and butter issues, as Herman always highlights, not through populist solutions, not by weakening all South Africans' property rights, not by centralizing power in the hands of the cabinet or a specific minister And not to say Minister McPherson would abuse it. Any politician, let's say it's concentrated. The NHI is one thing I always want to talk about, concentrating that much in terms of resources and control for the country's healthcare in the hands of one politician. Just based on pure sort of risk analysis, you don't do that kind of thing. It just, the incentives for abuse are too broad. So yeah, that, all in all, I'm struggling to figure out if there's a cunning plan here, if there's something wider going on. I don't know, maybe about the optics with President Ramaphosa now going to Washington next week, scheduled to meet with President Trump, that maybe again there's a plan in some kind of way to try and pull the wool over President Trump's eyes, over the Americans' eyes, and say, see, you know, we've got responsible ministers, there's no expropriation happening, let's make a deal, all that kind of thing. I think that sort of line is going to be sorely exposed. But maybe that's part of the thinking. I'm not sure. And just to add a last point, I see Herman has unmuted, and I very much want to give him more airtime, because he needs to agree with me here, not disagree. But just Deputy President Mashatile, yesterday at NAMPO, he told farmers that the government's key message to them was, quote, "We are with you." A week ago, when he was speaking in the Eastern Cape, he said, "We'll use the Expropriation Act as a tool to advance land justice. I know some do not like this act, but we will implement it whether they like it or not." We talk about making a stronger case for South Africa from an investment point of view, from a growth point of view, all that kind of thing. When you've got ministers and the deputy president talking in such different ways about such a key piece, not just of legislation, but about a core part of a prosperous society, i.e. strong property rights, are we then surprised that it becomes all the more difficult to make a real investment case for South Africa?
You know, in, I don't know, 1810, actually probably earlier, in 1600, you could say one thing to one audience and another thing to another audience, and those two audiences wouldn't hear the things you said to the other audience. Unfortunately, for Mashatile, we live in the year 2025, where saying we're going to crush these evil land thief farmers on one hand, and then going and saying, "No, we're your best friends, we love you," to the said land thieves later, it's not really going to go down, because I think everyone could see what he said to the other crowd. Just bonkers stuff. Anyway, Herman, you look like, you know, you're about to explode with enthusiasm to say something, so please go ahead.
No, that's just my face. So I think three things I want to add to this discussion, and then we could move on. I mean, we could literally go on about this for hours. Is that on Chris's point of whether we could trust the government, McPherson, I think, made what he thought was a clever point, saying expropriation as a word has become so toxified and weaponized. Perhaps we need another word to describe this.
Sorry, can I just add to that, where he talks about, you know, it's been used by politicians as though he's not one. It's like, bro,
yes,
you're a politician.
Yes, I mean, self-awareness didn't really register on the Röntgen scale. But I have a suggestion, and it's very rare that I don't get that I don't think of a sort of a useful riposte immediately. I usually get in trouble for things I should not have said and said, rather than thinking, "Oh shucks, I should have said that." But I should have said, "Yes, Minister, let's call it land shedding. Let's call it land shedding, because we've got power, but here's power and here isn't power. And to protect the whole system, let's take some of the power here and give it to those people over there so that we can make sure that the system doesn't collapse. Let's call it land shedding. Let's try that and see if people then go, oh, yeah, that's so much better. That's so much better. It's now massively detoxified, because that's the same government that will manage these processes. The second point I want to make is that next week, we are publishing a new polling report that contains public perceptions on policy preferences. And we ask people directly, do you approve or disapprove? Do you support or oppose the Expropriation Act? And the ANC should pay very close attention to that finding, because its own supporters oppose the act at a higher rate than the national average. But we'll get to that next week. And then the last thing I want to say, and I'm going to push back here a bit, I see Karen in the comments saying all politicians can't be trusted. It's really that straightforward. I'm afraid I'm going to disagree with you. I know politicians who are actually in it for the right reasons. I'm not going to do them the disservice of naming them, but I'm afraid that lets them off the hook. If we're going to go with the thing that don't ever trust a politician, it feels like we are lowering our standards for public representation, because there's no way we're going to get away from politics. Politics is going to be with us as long as we have human beings with us. So rather than having a cynical dismissal of all politicians, we should simply set higher standards. And someone like Minister McPherson shouldn't be given the leeway to say, oh, just a politician politicianing. We should say what you're doing is frankly a bit disgusting, sir. You're going against what you said. You're going against your party. You are misconstruing this act either willfully or ignorantly. And that is unacceptable.
Yeah. No, if you expect everyone to lie to you, don't be surprised when people lie to you. I agree with that point completely. You need to kind of keep those standards up of expecting more from those in power, regardless of their party or whatever. John, let me go just on some final thoughts to you, if you have anything to add.
Yeah, just one final thought, which is I believe the minister, as other politicians and ANC politicians have also done, said that the expropriation power was necessary in cases of, for example, hijacked buildings, abandoned buildings, et cetera, where, you know, utilities bills and rates and taxes liabilities have escalated to a huge amount, like, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of rands outstanding on the municipal accounts. And you need the expropriation power to deal with that. I don't think you do, because there's also something called the seizing of assets and the settlement of debt. You know, so imagine you've got a 1 million rand building with a 2 million rand rates account on it. Then I do think that there's a way for the municipality to say, okay, well, this account is not going to get paid. We're going to take that building, sell it, and then use that to settle the debt. And again, I don't think you need an expropriation power for that.
All right. So with all of that, let's finish off today with, I think, something a little bit lighter. That was a delightful news story that I read recently. The ANC in Gauteng is very upset with the media. And it's not uncommon for politicians and indeed podcasters and all types to bash the media. But this was a particularly amusing bash. The ANC's provincial spokesperson said that it was seeking to improve its relationship with the media to restore the party's image. Speaking at a media briefing in Johannesburg yesterday, ANC coordinator Hope Papo said the party must defend itself. Quote, "The media continues to portray ANC leaders as suspicious individuals in a generalized way. And this has created an attitude of public distrust towards the ANC, particularly in metros and some of the affluent sections of society. Much of the narrative surrounding the ANC has sought to portray the image of the organization as being synonymous with mismanagement, maladministration, and a lack of service delivery. This needs to come to an end," he made the case, saying that this has justifiably cornered the organization towards a more responsive and defensive public relations strategy instead of a proactive and engaging one. "We don't agree that this should be the approach." Chris, your thoughts on the media's role in portraying the ANC so negatively?
So I guess two things. Talking about improving the party's relationship with the media, to me, sounds very Orwellian. So I hope the media is ready for what that's going to involve. Maybe, I don't know, re-education workshops in the Thule House. I don't know exactly what that's going to, what all the details are going to be, but good luck to the media. Just second point around falling back onto that easy position of saying it's just losing support in these quote-unquote affluent areas. In 2019, the party got, 57% in last year's elections, 40% in Gauteng in 2019, above 50% in last year's elections, 34%. So if the party thinks it's really just a few key areas in South Africa, not across the country, across their own voters and supporters, that South Africans, never mind the media, that South Africans have lost faith and trust in the ANC, their own supporters, then I think their decline is very much guaranteed. If it wasn't already, if you don't take these learnings from reality, it's just going to continue to bite you, I think, as things continue to develop. I think it's indicative of a party that wants to pretend that reality was different from what it is. We've seen this, for example, in some of its, not its directly, but some of those who have been appointed by the party. There was a representative of the SANDF, might be a general, after the troops had pulled out of Rwanda as part of the wider, quote-unquote, peacekeeping mission. I think, John, we spoke about this recently when he said, you know, tell us to go to the sun or to the moon, either one or both, and we will go. It's just about what the edicts are, what the ideology is, not about what reality tells them, what they need to do to actually get their support back up at any point.
Herman, here I was thinking that the ANC was doing all sorts of things that had shaken the public trust. But little did I know, I was just being tricked by the evil mainstream media to thinking that the ANC was this rapscallion of an organization and that this had caused the ANC to be unnecessarily defensive. Oh dear, what are your thoughts on this?
No, I mean, the merit of the case really strengthens if we think back over the last 5 years. I mean, there was this one damning moment where the mainstream media really took a very ugly hit at Ramaphosa by calling him majestic. Really negative stuff, unfair, and as someone who's just literally written a book that's coming to a good bookstore near you at the end of June, about the election campaign, I can tell you that if you think that in this day and age, particularly with social media, you can somehow put poor government performance down to bad PR, I think you've just sort of missed the last 50 years of communications development. It's not the 1990s where, you know, the buttoned up Riankrijwagens of the world form public opinion. It's still a factor, will always be a factor, but it's just really, really naive to think that, the ANC would have the sterling reputation were it just not for Adrian Basson and the Daily Maverick.
Some words of wisdom to finish off the episode for today, John.
What do you think? Certainly the media can be unkind, and I think it can be unkind even when politicians or other people perform well, but that's not the case here. So I do think, you know, that the ANC does deserve criticism for its governance.
Indeed. Wouldn't it be nice if it was all just a conspiracy and that was the only reason things were going bad? Unfortunately, life is not so simple or so easy. But with that thought, let us close up for today. Thank you very much to my super large panel. And I hope that everyone found this slightly experimental show more interesting than usual. We're going to try it out a couple of episodes in the future, see how it goes. But thank you very much, everyone, to being on today. And we'll see you all next week on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful weekend.